Blog Talk Radio.
Every day we wake up. Good morning on this beautiful, rainy, cleansy day in the fifth day of May here in 2009. We welcome all enjoying the honoring hour, and okay. A little technical difficulties there this morning. We really want to extend our thanks to Dana Angelini and Ariana for the use of their music on our show as we've launched it this year from their CD One Light at a Time, and it's a great way, I think, to really start off the show. I want to say good morning to everyone, and really good morning, universe. We have a really exciting show planned today. And before I get started, let's just have a heads up here that Lynn will actually, my co-partner here, Lynn Allen, is actually going to be possibly in and out of the show today. She's tied up in Richmond. She's had some personal emergencies, and her schedule's been really tight. So she will chime in as soon as she can call in. And with that said, we actually are welcoming a guest co-host, Renee Mahaffey, to help keep things a little spiced up. Renee is a very gifted, intuitive, and entrepreneur with several successful businesses in South and North Carolina. Renee, how are you this morning?
Hi, JR. I am excited to be here, and thank you guys for inviting me to co-host here on the Honoring Hour. I'm really excited to be here, and I'm very interested to listen and speak with Susie Crowes, who's going to be talking about kombucha today.
I'm really excited, too. I think it's going to be a great subject. Now, I really want to remind everyone of the call-in number real quick, and that is area code 347-838-8944. Again, that's 347-838-8944. And if you've not logged in yet, go ahead and log in. The chat room should be up by now. And you can actually key in your questions at any time. And Renee will help focus on any questions that may pertain to our subject. Now, as I said, I'm really excited about today's show. And our guest today is a self-taught expert in the kitchen, which does not just include cooking, but the reality and truth behind those foods that we put into our bodies. She's learned to cook at a very young age with the help of her grandmothers, starting out even that young. As an adult, she has continuously sought out the truth through learning and experimentation about how foods affect our body and our health. She lives in Virginia on a farm where she and her husband are raising their children organically, growing and raising their own food. And as she talks to us about kombucha mushrooms or tea, Susie, welcome to the show. And is this a tea or mushrooms or what?
Well, thank you, JR. I'm happy to be here today and talk to you about kombucha. It is technically not a mushroom. It gets called that, I think, because of its visual appearance. It is a symbiotic colony of bacteria. One is a vinegar-producing bacteria, and then two other yeasts, which are similar to the same yeasts that are present in sourdough breads and bread-making yeasts. Kombucha is actually very ancient. I suspect that it really, historically speaking, went further back than even the recorded history of it. Perhaps someone had made some tea and let it set out, and the conditions were ripe, and then this little bacterial mat formed on the top, and they got brave enough and tried it and found that it was delicious, and then upon further drinking found that it actually had some nice effects on the body. So the first recorded history of it is in 221 BC China, and it was known as the Tea of Immortality. It's been made in the Middle East, in Russia. People suspect that it has come across with the spice caravan trade. And in this country, it has come across this century. There is not a lot of scientific research out there on it recently. There were some studies that were done in Germany and Russia on it in the mid-1900s, but a lot of those studies have not come to light here in this country. I think some of it's a language barrier, and with the Cold War, some of those documents are even classified from what information I've been able to glean from it. When you are thinking about kombucha, you have to remember it is definitely a natural product, and it's this kind of cool little universe, really, the way I look at it, as it sits there on my shelf and makes this wonderful, delicious drink. The idea that I'm actually drinking something that has been around for so long sort of kind of makes it sort of a whole world feeling, you know, this connection.
Wow, that's absolutely amazing. What does it look like?
It is a disc in shape. It has a tendency just to grow on top of whatever vessel. So if you had a square container, it would be square in shape. I use a pickle jar to make mine in, an old pickle jar. one side will be flat and shiny and smooth to the touch. It's a gelatinous type of material. And the underside will be a little bit more jelly. If you've ever seen vinegar mother at the bottom, you might actually see some filaments in the tea that will filter throughout the tea itself. My kids actually really like to touch it. It has a really nice feel to it, and it actually is edible. You can eat the mushroom itself.
So the taste of it is something that you, is it like sour, or is it something that you can really easily get comfortable with?
Absolutely, it's a lot like apple cider vinegar. If it goes too long, it can be like a vinegar, but it's more like a cider, apple cidery taste when it's made to its, you know, the cherry moment, I guess, you know, like the peak of its bloom on it, like a good wine. It can have a slight fermentation, carbonation, like a little bit of a fizz to it, and that could be increased by bottling it and capping it, and actually leaving it out for a couple of days will increase that carbonation action in it. It's very slightly sweet, but not overly sweet. The sugar and the caffeine in the tea, when you make it, actually gets eaten up by the bacteria and completely changes what's in it. So it no longer is as sweet as when you first made the tea. It actually doesn't really even taste like tea anymore. It really has a cidery taste. It's very pleasant.
So now you're mentioning the caffeine in the tea. So you actually mix this mushroom with the tea? Can it be any kind of tea or...?
Green tea and black tea are best. I have seen recipes for tea made with different things, but, you know, like herbal teas and additions to the basic green and black tea. But I just make it with the black tea and have done some with green tea, and it is very, very... what's the word I'm looking for? Consistent in the results. You can make it with other flavored teas, but I think for optimal health benefits, using just the black or the green tea is what I would recommend.
Susie, you mentioned benefits. What are the benefits of kombucha? And also, if we could go back just a little bit, how did you become to be involved with it, and where did you get your kombucha?
Oh, good questions, Renee. The kombucha that I received from a friend who had read about it back in early 2000, and she gave me a bit of a mushroom, and I started doing some research on it and found that there were a lot of reports of people that had had arthritis that had, the pain had gone away, the joints were more limber. You have people that were reporting, not euphoric, but people that perhaps had, you know, trouble with depression and mood swings and things like that. It helped to even out some of these people. The documentation, scientific facts to back that up have not come forward. There has not been that kind of research into it. But the longevity of it and the anecdotal reports, you know, just common people coming and saying, hey, this is, I've been drinking this and this has been phenomenal. And I mean, I know some personal friends of mine have personally had profound changes in their life from drinking kombucha. For them, it's been very pivotal for them. And you will read testimony all over the place from individuals who have had tremendous results from it. And some of that's not hard. Even though there aren't a lot of scientific data out there, some of that's really not hard for me to understand because of some of the constituents that are in the final brew. It is, once the bacteria do their job, the kombucha is high in, it may vary, you know, because it is an organic compound, but you're going to have B vitamins present. There's a lot of vitamin C present in it. There are different acids that help aid the body in detoxifying and aid different organs in actually doing the job that they do, help break down toxins in the body so that the body can actually get rid of them a little bit easy. And, of course, anytime you have a bacteria that's producing something like a vitamin for you, generally it is in a small enough, you know, amount that the body can take it up better.
Well, I would like to take a moment to acknowledge Ms. Lynn Allen, who has joined us, I think, on the call. And see.
Yeah, Lynn, can you guys hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay, yeah, I'm kind of in a really busy area, so I hope that doesn't come through. I was listening just a little bit. I don't know what you guys have talked about because I did come in a little bit late. But, you know, Susie, when I was over there looking at the kombucha that you had a mushroom that you were kind of experimenting with. You had let a lot of the liquid go out. And I know that's been one of the things, like I've had a couple of friends who had gotten them and they're like, well, my mushroom died or something happened. And so it kind of gave me the impression that they were fragile. But when I was over at your house looking at what you had, I didn't get that impression. They seem a lot more durable than it just made me feel like I didn't have to be as afraid of them, I guess, is the best way.
Yes, I agree. That's funny. I'm glad you brought that up, Lynn. When I first started making kombucha, and as I say this, I want to precurse this with, yes, your equipment should be clean, and your environment that you're making the kombucha in should be clean. Don't mistake what I'm about to say as, you know, being nonchalant about the preparation. Always when you're working with your food, common sense of cleanliness is paramount for health and optimal nutrition from the food in the end. So when I first started making the kombucha, you know, I would, you know, swab my whole area down with vinegar and make sure the area was clean and wash everything and empty my jar out every time and clean out my jar and scrub my hands up to the elbow before I would touch anything. And one time I noticed that a mushroom, my life had gotten a little busy, and one of my little critters had developed a bit of mold. And, the poor little guy had been sitting there with not enough liquid, not enough stuff in it. And when I came back, I got busy again, okay, and couldn't just dump him out, which is what I was going to do. I noticed that when I went back, I couldn't see the mold anymore. And then I dissected it and I looked, and I noticed that the mushroom actually stopped the mold in its tracks, encapsulated it to sort of isolate it, and that was the first indication for me that this was a lot stronger of a living thing than I was first led to believe with all of the, you know, all of the precautions that I was told. You're right. It is kind of intimidating when we first start to work with fermented foods, and often we hear, oh, we're going to get this and we're going to get that, and, you know, you're going to get sick. But you have to remember that these foods have survived and lived and come down the line of antiquity in much less sanitary conditions than we have today. Water being, you know, one of the first things I can think of, the sanitary conditions of water have greatly improved. So in lieu of that, when I look at that, I think to myself, well, you know, how would an ancient grandmother deal with this? So a little bit more forgiving than my sterile, almost rubber glove treatment in the beginning. So, yes, you're right. That is, I'm glad you brought that up, because I don't want people to be afraid of it. It's very common sense, don't be afraid. Your nose will certainly tell you not to drink something.
And the kombucha, when you have it, you mentioned that you've got it in a glass container. You mentioned that do you need to keep it exposed to light, away from light?
Yes. Away from light. I keep it away from direct sunlight. I keep it in a clean area of my kitchen where the temperature is relatively stable. So I don't want it by a window where it's going to get sun part of the day and that's going to heat it up. And you know what I mean? I want to, for consistent results, you want to keep it in an area that's, kombucha does really well in between 65 degrees and 80, I believe. In between there is a nice spot, which most houses are pretty much in that area,
mm-hmm.
Even year-round. If the temperature goes up a little bit too hot, above that, what you may find is that the fermentation time or the culturing time is a little bit shorter, so check it more frequently. If you don't have air conditioning or something like that in a hot climate. So, clean area. You don't want it in a dusty, drafty area. You just want it in an area away from the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Park it where it can just sit and do its job. And you should do really well with that.
You know, Susie, I read an article which, you know, was very few on kombucha, okay, but it had mentioned there have been over 300 studies done on kombucha, which is actually more than, you know, a lot of the things that we're actually taking in our body today. But this study had mentioned that this tea is actually even used in for cancer patients and studies like that. Do you know anything about that?
I have heard that, and I have seen some of the articles that relate to that. What I have not seen is actual reports, scientific reports. Where did you get this from? A lot of the anti-cancer studies, I believe, were done in I want to say it was Germany, but I'm not completely sure about where, but I know what you mean about the studies, because there were some indications, but at least here in the United States, they're not accepting the data on those. So what you have is anecdotal studies. You have, you know, testimony, people that are doing well with those things. And that's what I know about that.
With the benefits that you talked about that you get, and how it actually affects the body and stuff. So you're looking at something now. This is something you don't have to stop eating or anything. This is something you can actually detox and cleanse your body with, in addition to your regular foods.
Yeah, I see it more as a supportive therapy. I don't see it. It aids in detoxification. It aids in digestion. It benefits the body in that it provides the body with with some vital acids that can help the body do the job that the body does already. And so it's more like a boost. There was a study in India where they found, hold on, I'm looking here. There was a study in India where they had found the found that it had antioxidant properties, and they were very comfortable with that. And then there was also a study with Cornell, that Cornell University, that also confirmed the antimicrobial as well. So it is more like a supportive therapy. You could, with a good, healthy diet, add kombucha to your diet. I wouldn't make it your magic bullet, but I certainly would feel comfortable in adding it to a good diet.
And is that how you use yours, Susie? Do you use it daily? What are some of the benefits that you have seen, that you have felt and throughout with yourself and with your family? And like I said, how do you use yours?
We pretty much, when we decant it around here, the kids drink a good bit of it, and I drink a good bit of it. I notice that I have better digestion when I'm drinking it, and my kids really do very well. They don't get ill very often, and when they do, they're really quick at bouncing back. They don't stay sick. So some of the things that we've done with that here, I've also used it topically. I had a dog that had skin issues, and it seemed to bring a lot of relief. Her skin issues were related to yeast. Probably the most definitive for me is going to be the digestion. When I notice that when I'm drinking the kombucha, my food just really digests very well. So it does have the kind of bacteria that help repopulate your gut. That's one of the things that it does. And the type of acid actually helps with your stomach. There's been reports of people curing stomach ulcers and things like that.
So now, Susie, because it doesn't sound like this is something I can get seeds for and start growing. So where would, say one of the callers just really wants to, you know, get some of this. How do they get it and start growing it?
There are companies online that do offer a mushroom starter mushroom. And certainly if someone wanted to contact me, I could probably mail a mushroom out to them. Or if they know someone, they can get it directly from a friend. Those in this country, it's either giving it or if you don't know anyone that can give you one, then you'll have to go outside and get one through a company that supplies. And if you go online there's a, just Google in kombucha, and you should come up with different ones. Do look around, because there are companies that are selling the whole kit idea. There are also much more reasonable ways to get it. And also, if you could even get on I know there are lists. I got my kefir grains that way when I first was looking for kefir grains, which is another cultured bacteria critter. I just Googled it, and I was able to find a woman that was just out of her home to get the culture from. So you should be able to find something online.
Oh, well, that's really cool. Now, so is this something that you could possibly even find in a health food store, or no?
No, not the mushroom. You'll be able to find the drink already bottled. And honestly, because I have the mushroom at home, I've never really tasted it in a bottle. A lot of people like it, and I don't really know how live of a product it is.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, what you thought of the preservation process probably and the liveness of it.
I really can't make a statement to say, you know, backed up by any kind of research that I've done. I just think that things are best made fresh. And so when I think of that, I wonder what's the time frame between the bottling and the shipping to the store, and how long does it sit in the fridge or on the shelf or where they put it? I believe it's in the fridge before the consumer buys it. And while refrigeration will slow down the fermentation process, if it's live and it's sitting on a shelf, it's still actively doing its job of consuming. Even in the fridge, it will slow it down, but there'll be a small, minute amount of activity still going on. So I'm not really an advocate for bottled things. I prefer to make things fresh here.
Well, I guess I would have to agree with you on that. I mean, just the whole thought of it having to be processed and bottled.
It's kind of a common sense sort of thing when it comes to that, in my estimation. But if that's all you can get and you're doing well with that, by all means, continue.
So now you mentioned that your children were taking this. Now, how old are your children? Was it hard to get them to start taking it, or
no, not at all?
You know, I have a 9-year-old, and I can't fathom getting her to try and drink it.
Oh no! I will say that if you have someone that's a bit, you know, what I find is that people when they start seeing real foods that are made traditional ways. That's probably the biggest obstacle to getting them to try something, is that it's unusual. It didn't come out of a box or a bottle. And to see the little bacterial mat on top with the filaments is a little bit hard for people to, it's a little gelatinous, that kind of freaks people out. So if you want your 9-year-old to try it, decant it and give her a glass, already strained, okay? Don't let her see the little jelly guys in there, because that might.
Yeah, we have a texture issue, so that will not go over well.
Yeah, especially people with texture issues, which a lot of children do.
Uh-huh.
My kids have never had a problem with it. Everyone here really likes it. The taste is really delicious. It is a yummy drink. It's a very nice alternative to a soft drink, you know, if your kids are soda drinkers or things like that. It's a really nice alternative to something like that. So,
well, that's cool. So now, like you said, this isn't like a silver bullet, you know, it's kind of like, is this something that, you know, you got to take for a while for it to really start getting, to feel an effect, you know, or see a difference in your life? You know, say somebody with really bad allergies wants to start taking it.
I would always, especially because it is, people have issues with different things sometimes, especially in this country where you've got so many people with impaired GI systems. I would recommend that if you have never had kombucha, to start off with a small 2-ounce amount, and then, you know, maybe do that. Try that once a day, and if you're handling that well, then maybe try 2 ounces twice a day, and then you could actually move yourself up to like 8 ounces a day. It's not our all fluid of the day. It is a drink, a tonic, a supportive drink. So they would start there, and of course, you know, they should be eating a really good diet. So this will aid, even if they're eating a poor diet. But I would not recommend that anyone go out and just start chucking down, you know, great amounts of kombucha in hopes that it's just going to do things. Now, many people have reported that they have felt within a week or two of drinking it, within 30 days, they're just noticing big changes. So you won't see something overnight, but it'll be cumulative. You should be able to notice differences. And, of course, intuitively listen to your inside. If this is for you, you will know. It should make you happy.
And, Susie, is there anybody that should not try the kombucha?
I would be very cautious if you already know that you have allergies to molds and things like that, unless you're very sure of somebody making it properly. Proper preparation is important.
Okay.
You know, I did talk about the resilience of the mushroom. However, you know, obviously I had a mushroom that did get molds. That poor little guy was compromised because I got too busy to take care of him. So, now I never did drink off that mushroom, but it was still an interesting experiment for me to see that the mushroom did heal itself. So I would recommend that if you have issues with molds or are allergic, to definitely just try a small amount and see how that does for you, see how it feels for you. Pregnant women, I would stay away from drinking very large amounts, very small you can handle, but the baby may not be able to handle, like if it starts pulling toxins out of your body, that's going mm-hmm. to the baby, so you don't really want to do that. So maybe wait till after the baby, but if you really feel like, you know, if you, maybe you have a very clean system and you've been eating really well all your life, you know what I mean, and it's part of your supportive therapy, that's different.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that yours, one of yours did get mold. Mm-hmm. What does it entail when you have a kombucha? What are your duties in making sure that the kombucha lives? Do you have to care for it daily? What are some of the things that you have to do?
It's actually terribly forgiving, and I like that because my life can get very busy. I'll pick up a new project and I'll run with it, and then I'll forget some of my regular things. So one of the first recommendations that I would say is that when you get a mushroom, to make your tea, and then when you get that second mushroom from the tea, start another one. So you have one and you have a backup, just in case you get busy. That's a good precautionary thing to do, just so that you have something there. And as far as making it, it is extremely simple, and it's very easy to maintain. It's 4 tea bags, 3 quarts of water, a cup of sugar, a mushroom, some existing tea or vinegar, apple cider vinegar. You can make it with apple cider vinegar as well. A small amount. The proportions are different. If you're using existing kombucha tea, already cultured tea, you would use about a half a cup in with the mushroom. And then you put all that into a very clean 1 gallon jar. I use an empty pickle jar. And then you cover it with, I like to use cloth napkin, and I put a rubber band around that. You want to let the air get into it. And then you sit that in a draft-free, you know, fairly decent, warmish place in your kitchen or wherever you have a good spot that it will be undisturbed, and you let that sit for 7 to 14 days. So that's about it. And then when you are ready to decant, you would pour off the tea and then replenish the jar. And if you at that time choose to remove the additional mushroom, you can.
So then all that tea that you pour off, you just put that in another container and refrigerate it, or?
Yeah, the actual cultured tea.
Uh-huh.
The tea, yes. Yes. And when you're brewing, when you're brewing the tea, I would recommend also, there are some things that I would stay away from. I would not put it in any container that can leach because of the acidic quality of the kombucha and the different acids that are in it. You can have a problem with if you have a ceramic container or a painted container. I would never put it in that. Clear glass, stainless steel would be my only recommendations for keeping the kombucha and brewing kombucha. And I would use distilled water. Especially if you have city water, stay away from city water. You should be staying away from city water anyway. However, especially for kombucha, it's chlorinated and it has fluoride in it, city water, so you would want to use purified water or distilled water. And I use well water here, but I've had my water tested, so if you know you have really good water at your house, you should be okay with that. And some recommendations are to take your water and boil it. You know, you always boil it first, and then you make your tea. Bring it to a boil, and then let that come to room temperature before you add it in with the mushroom. So you boil your water, put your tea bags in, your cup of sugar, you mix it up, you let it come to room temperature, can do that at night. The next morning you pour it over your mushroom and you leave it alone 7 to 14 days. And you'll notice it'll have an aroma. When you first do it, it'll smell like tea. And then in about a week, you should be able to smell it, and it'll start to smell like apple cider.
Oh, wow. Now, Susie, I mean, you hear a lot, because I've taken these pills. They're like four, like, probiotic pills. And I mean, I took them for like 6 weeks or whatever, and it didn't seem like anything was, I mean, I just really wasn't experiencing, you know, anything in my body.
Right.
So I don't know if maybe they were, like, their shelf life was dead. I mean, I don't know what. But do you think this is one of the best things out there? For the body, this tea?
I think any time that you're getting food, a food source, that's actual something that your body can use that way, in my personal opinion, yes, I prefer to get my vitamins and my probiotics through food. Not everyone can do that, and sometimes, and not everyone, it's their yen to be in the kitchen. So for someone like that, again, if you're going to take a supplement, you might want to do some research on the type and efficacy of that particular supplement, because, you know, probiotics now are popping up everywhere, and just about every company's making probiotics. Some are better than others, and some aren't stored properly. So, yes, JR, I think that kombucha and there are other ferments and other cultured type drinks that do also offer the friendly flora that your body needs.
So would the kombucha be considered a probiotic, do you think? Is it?
Yes, to many. It's actually a friend of mine uses it as a probiotic with her children that can't tolerate dairy probiotics.
Wow.
So her children have GI issues with autism, and it's been helpful for that. So, yes. Yes.
And mine.
It does have the flora to help you replenish. I know there's saccharomyces in there, and it can vary in the strains, because you remember that even though you have the mushroom, it is an open air product, so it's going to pull other things from the atmosphere that are going to, like I said, you're when you make a sourdough, the reason sourdough works is because there's existing yeasts in the air. There are some also on the flour, probably, you know, the grain that come with the grain, but the yeast that are floating in the air, they're attracted to the medium that you provide for them to feed off of. And so you may get some other strains in there, but yes.
But, I mean, I'm looking at it, you know, in the health aspect, it's probably better for our bodies, because it's actually turning it into something, a benefit to us. It's, you know, somebody like myself, because I have major allergy issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just thinking, every time the more I listen, it's like, oh my gosh, I need to be taking this, because I have dairy issues and I can't do the dairy probiotics that everybody keeps, you know, raving about.
I really think it would be helpful for many people. Again, you would start off with a small amount and then work your way up. Around here, we just sort of liked it so much. I know on a personal level, I think I probably had like the 2 ounces when I first tried it just to see how it went, but pretty much, you know, when it comes out, it doesn't last very long. I usually run out before I can decant another batch, because the kids really like it. It'll go. I don't think you'll have a problem with your 9-year-old. Once she has a taste of it, I think she'll really like it. It is also very forgiving. If you don't quite get to it at the end of your ferment, you know, the culture time where it would be more sweet, it will turn a little bit more acidic. And sometimes diabetics will let it get a little bit more acid to burn off a little bit more of the sugar. But it is really interesting to me how the bacteria turn just that simple sugar in the constituents in the tea into this, you know, I just think it's really neat how they do that. Turn it into a neat drink.
Now, Susie, do you use any particular, speaking of sugar, do you use any particular sugar, a cane sugar, or just regular sugar?
You know, I really just use white sugar, but I know you can make it with other natural sugars. And natural sugars, I mean real, real brown sugar, real sugar sugar. You can also use honey. And I have seen two schools of thought with that, but when I... You know, I have read the articles that said, oh, no, it's you've got to just use the black tea and the white sugar. And then I've read the articles that say you can use this and you can try different things. You want to stay away from, don't mistake the sweetness with something like Splenda. You would not be able to get a result with Splenda. Splenda is maybe made from sugar, but that's a chemical. And so you want to make sure that it is a natural sugar. I use white sugar. It's readily available, and I don't. Mind using white sugar for something like this because I know it's going to be converted into something really healthy. I use different sugars for my table sugar and my baking sugars. All natural, but, you know, something with a little bit more vitamin content than the white stuff. But for this, go ahead.
I was going to say, so what about like a maple, because you can get maple sugar, or do you think that's too far away from regular sugar?
You know what I would do? I would recommend if someone wants to experiment with that. Now, it may change some of the, it may change some things that end up being made by the kombucha. But again, that's a natural thing. And one of the articles that I've read about kombucha suggests that it may even have come from a birch mushroom type of tea that was made early on in China. So. I don't see why maple sugar would be a problem as long as it's a natural sugar. However, I would do an experiment batch. I would take a mushroom from my mother culture and start a maple sugar batch to see how that turned out.
So you would stay with some type of a processed sugar like that versus like maybe maple syrup or, you know, say there's somebody who's like all into doing maple syrup and everything.
No, I'm not. I really am open for experimentation. I think that's how we move the open that envelope up for this. Okay, I think because it's so new in this country. But you have to remember that this is really old, and if you were out on the plains of China and all you could get was honey from a bee, or maple sugar, or who knows, maybe even nectar from some fruit. You know what I mean? I think if you knew you needed to put sugar in the tea for the bacteria to go, you would pick what you could use. So common sense for me says that that should be okay. But as a caution, I would use, I would take one of my other mushrooms, because every time you make tea, you're going to get a new mushroom. I would take one of my other mushrooms, and I would do an experimental batch with it. So if they could just make it the first couple times so that they get, they have an extra mushroom to play with. And then after that, if it works out, sure, why not?
Kind of like if we have sweet tea and unsweet tea, can you make it without the sugar?
No.
Okay, so you absolutely need the sugar.
Yes, absolutely you need the sugar. But remember, the sugar is going to be altered.
Mm-hmm.
So as the bacteria eat it up, they're producing things from the nutrition that they get from the sugar.
Okay, great.
Because they live off the sugar. So it's not sugar. It's not the white sugar. I know it sounds horrible to think of white sugar going in anything. Okay? but when the critters are done with it, it's not the same thing.
Mm-hmm. They break it down into another.
Yes.
Okay, gotcha.
They eat the sugar, and they, as a byproduct, produce things that our body can use.
Wow.
This is really, I never thought in my whole life I would ever think of going and buying regular, plain, no overprocessed white sugar again.
I really do. I know. It's funny because I'm so used to doing it now that hearing you guys, I can completely remember when I first started making this. And I was at that point, you know, we were just, everything was Sukkanaat. And like, why can't I just use that, you know? And at the time I was told, at that time when I first started making it, the lady that gave it to me told me, you know, strictly the white sugar, strictly the white sugar. But over time I've looked into it a little bit more, and you can use other forms of sugar. But, Jerry, you had asked me about maple sugar. I'm sorry.
It helps to understand the process of what happens to it. So that has been very, very enlightening.
Well, going back to JR and your maple syrup and your maple sugar, the only reason that gives me a little bit of pause is because, and I don't know why it would make a difference, but it's just, it's an unusual sugar. You don't see it, one, you don't see it that often. It's very expensive when you do see it. And
yeah. Well, it has a lot of nutrients.
It does.
And minerals in it, yeah.
Yes, it really does. But I just don't know. I don't really know how it, you know, that's a new question. So I'm thinking in terms of what will work in the kombucha and give you optimum for your price, you know what I mean? And whatever. I'm not sure whether maple sugar would be your highest choice for that. But
right.
By all means, if you have an abundant supply and you want to try it out again, go for it.
No, I mean, it's just really awesome. I mean, I mean, the subject is, you know, wonderful for me because it just gives me some, now I'm just completely like enthralled by this subject. Okay. So I'm definitely going to be skimming the internet trying to find, you know, these kombucha, or even I'd like to see if I know somebody locally or find somebody that may have some.
Yeah, right.
But, I mean, it's just something in addition to what we're already doing, focusing on our lives, you know.
Right, right. When you are on the internet, there's a lot of information out there that does seem to contradict, and there's a lot of scare stories. Not really. There's actually only a couple scare stories that I'm surprised there's not more, but I guess I encourage people that when they're doing their research to try to look at who's offering you the information and what they have to gain from swaying your opinion. And
Susie,
also,
do you have a website or is there one that you know of that you can maybe send people to?
I obviously like WestonAPrice.org. I think they do a really good job of doing their research, and they have a huge database of traditional food information with a lot of documentation to back it up. That's one of the things I like about that. I'm sorry?
Can you repeat that website?
WestonAPrice.org, and that's okay. WestonAPrice, P-R-I-C-E.
.org. Okay.
And there was a website that I thought had some good information, and did have another thing I look for is to see if they've got references or if they're just telling me something, but there's nothing to back it up. Like, where'd you get that information from? I want to know where they got their information, especially when you're on the web. And if you can trace back some of that information, take a good look at it. You know, is it a good, reliable source? But I thought this website did a fairly decent job of having a lot of information all in one place, and that was Kombucha America. That's pretty easy to remember.
KombuchaAmerica.com.
Yeah. And there really are quite a lot of out there. But I like the way he put a lot of things together when I looked at that website.
On Kombucha America?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's cool. That really gives us a lot. Well, you know, because you have put years into this, you know, and that gives us a big step up, you know, in our search, you know, for everyone, you know, all the listeners too, personally, you know.
Well,
and on one of these two websites, would they be able to purchase a kombucha mushroom or a kombucha?
Weston Price is an information site. If they really, again, that's another reason I really like them, because they are not really looking to sell you anything. It's more of a dissemination of good information, and their goal is to educate. You'll find a whole lot of other stuff on the site, and they will have links to related products, like other places that you can maybe get some things that they talk about. There may be a link on there for Kombucha. I know that Kombucha America does sell the mushroom, but it's pretty straightforward. It's not, hi, you need this fancy mushroom cover, you know what I mean?
Right.
They're just selling a mushroom, and that's, to me, that's, you know, if I was here when I do local classes here out where I live, you know, I offer the mushroom for a donation very cheaply because I don't feel like it should be given. You know what I mean? Like, make a donation for my time, but here, you should, if you really need the mushroom, just take it, kind of deal. And give it to a friend when you make babies. So, JR, once you have your mushroom, and Renee, if you ever choose to get a mushroom, then as they proliferate, you'll have some to give out.
You know, you just mentioned you do training classes or something. Do you do workshops on this?
I have done some classes on the kombucha and mm-hmm. some other cultured preparations. I like to do fermenting and culturing and cooking things. So, yes, I do that occasionally.
Oh, wow. You'll have to give us that information whenever you do that, and we can actually, because I'm here in Richmond, and it's not too far from you. And
right.
There's a lot of interest in this stuff here. So, we'll have to get together or something.
Yeah, I that would be really nice to hear. I would really like that. I have talked to other people out in Richmond that have been interested. So,
How would the listeners get in touch with you?
They can. I don't have a website or anything fancy right now. I am raising children and trying to farm and do new things. So if someone does have a question, they can email me, and I can give you my email address. And that's Suzy Croes, SUZICROES, @gmail.com.
Okay.
So if someone gets a mushroom, yeah.
Mm-hmm. @gmail.com.
@gmail.com, yes.
Okay.
So if they have a question or they get a mushroom or, you know, they're really having trouble finding a mushroom, just give me a shout out.
Okay. Well, we have someone on the call right now. Let me see if I can bring them on and we can get a quick question in before we go.
Uh-huh, that's fine.
Hi, this is JR. Can I help you?
Hi, JR. Am I the one you're talking to?
Yes, this is JR. You're here on the call with us all live. How are you
today?
Okay,
well, I'm pretty good. I'm one of those friends of Susie's that had the profound effects. And I just wanted to say I wish you were stressing more the happiness quotient. She may not remember, but when her kids first had this, they nicknamed it Happy Juice. And other friends, their kids nicknamed it Happy Juice without hearing anybody else was doing that. So I just wanted it stressed more that it really does give a lot of people that euphoria feeling.
Well,
hi, Susie.
Hi, Susie.
That's funny. She's right. That is true. I did mention that a lot of people have a euphoria when they are drinking it. So it does absolutely have that effect on some people. That's so true. I'm glad you called in and mentioned that.
I mean, I used to be obsessive and belong to Yahoo groups and whatnot, and just the things people would say, you know, these old women would say, I don't drink anything else, I swear my sweat smells like it, you know. But, it doesn't work this way with everyone. But, like, I have a friend that I turned on to it last summer, and she kept drinking it and making it, never really noticed anything. And then finally in January she says, oh, no, I don't believe it. I never had the winter blues. But she never actually felt, you know, anything going on, but she was one of those people, you know, when it wasn't in the sunshine, she'd get depressed, and she never had it this winter.
Hmm. Oh, wow, what a great added benefit.
We
can all use the happy pill, huh? That's
thank
great.
I'll hang up now and let you have it back. I just wanted to stress that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Susie, that's a wonderful way to end the show. We're actually at the top of the hour now, and I want to express a wonderful heartfelt thank you for bringing us this wonderful happy juice.
I love that term. That's a great term. Not very scientific, but it is a really nice thing, and it's a pleasant. It is certainly a pleasant happy juice to drink down. So I think you'll be very pleasantly surprised.
Well, thank you, Susie. And again, everyone, that was Susie Crowes joining us today with a kombucha, the happy juice we're talking about. And we want to really thank you again. And I want to remind everyone that you can go to the archive at any time to listen to this show or any of the other shows that seem to be your favorites. And Renee, thank you again for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much, JR. I really enjoyed it. And thank you, Susie, also. I plan on checking out the two websites that you left us with, the westernoprice.org and the kombuchaamerica.com. And I thank you for being available to the listeners. We can also email you at suziecroes, that's C-R-O-E-S, at gmail.com with any questions. And we do appreciate you being available to answer any of the listeners' questions. And thank you so much, JR.
Oh, thank you. And I want to remind the callers again, too, that you can join us again on May 19th with the author, Reverend Dr. Thelma, and her book, Parable of the Mayfly, which is a story of faith. And on June 2nd, we will have Carol Elia. She does therapy with dogs and children in grief. She works with hospice patients. And also again on June 16th with Melanie Yost with essential oils, and we'll learn of the healing effects and benefits of essential oils. Thank you all again, and we look forward to hearing from all of you again and reading all of your emails. Have a blessed week.
Thank you, JR.